Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. This show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is John Peterson, Development Manager at Argus Media. The first thing, I suppose, is just to give everyone a little bit of context on the background. I want to learn a little bit about, first off, the technologies that you first actually started to learn. And since then, I suppose it'd be interesting to see what you've learned since then. But how difficult it is, I suppose, once you've first mastered one technology, to then, you know, learn new ones. Does it get easier after you get over that initial hurdle?
Yeah. So, I mean, I started in the sort of mid-90s, and I got into software and computers pretty much by mistake. I had to do some work in the computer labs at uni, and pretty much had to teach myself how to use these kind of ancient Unix-based systems they had. So I sort of taught myself some random bits and pieces, and when I left uni, I realized you could now get a job with that limited degree of experience, and worked for a small agency and kind of took it from there. So I'm very much the self-taught route. And there is definitely, you know, a problem in the whole industry or the whole discipline of the constant need to learn ever more things. And I'm not sure it really does get easier. I think when you're young, it's also kind of addictive and fascinating. You basically just put the hours in. You do the whole late night bedroom, you know, obsessively tapping away, absorbing all the knowledge. And then eventually, certainly speaking for myself, you just can't maintain that kind of fanatical interest in the topic forever. And you sort of look at the next framework or the next language or the next whatever, and you kind of think, oh, I can't really be bothered. But then what you discover is if you've done enough, once you've got kind of maybe a decade under your belt or something, you start to realize that although there's constantly new technology coming out, to a large extent, the underlying principles are familiar. So, you know, I guess currently, if you look at, you know, cloud computing, everyone talks about how that's kind of a return to the old days of mainframes, terminals, where all your software ran in some remote IBM managed data center, and you just had a very thin client access to it. And in a sense, there's a familiar return to that now. So I think it's a mixture, but I think if you start off in life as a hands-on techie, there is a real fear the first time you realize you just can't face learning the next language or the next fad. And that moment when you realize kind of, you know, the young developers are using words you don't really get. And I think an important part of kind of career progression is to be able to let that go, to realize it's okay that there are people who are, you know, up to speed on the latest thing, and you don't need to understand the details of it. You just need to understand the fundamentals. And by and large, the fundamentals at a tech level are familiar. There may be some exceptions. You know, some aspects of functional programming are genuinely novel if you've never really come from a functional programming background. But of course, we've had functional languages for 30 plus years, so it's fashionable rather than genuinely new.
How do you find that the learning process goes? Does it help to kind of have the
concepts of what you're actually kind of working towards? Does that help to kind of clarify during the learning process? Because there's so many nuances and things that you have to learn. Have you got any kind of way that you approach things when you were trying to learn something new, or is it, I suppose, just bespoke to each individual?
My experience of teams is that people learn in surprisingly different ways. I'm kind of naturally curious. I spend far too much of my working day on Wikipedia, and much of it wholly unrelated to work, because I like learning stuff. So I guess I'm lucky in that respect. I think learning new things is fun. I like reading. I search around. I read blogs. I jump about. I'm not really great at videos because they're linear and you have to go at the same speed as the guy doing the video. But certainly within a team, some people don't learn that way at all. They really like a kind of, okay, this week I'm going to learn X, and I've got the book next to me, and I've got the online tutorial, and I'm going to work my way through it. So I think people do learn very differently, and from a management point of view, it's important to recognize that, and it's a challenge, because you can't just kind of say, you know, hey guys, everyone's got Safari books, go out there and read everything and, you know, discover funky new things and let me know what you find, because some people really won't do that. Likewise, on a training course, some people just hate training courses. They're like, yeah, I was bored, I understood what he was saying, I lost focus. What's the point of this? I could have sat at home and taught myself more, just, you know, experimenting. So yeah, people are very different.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, as you were talking about the team and how they're kind of learning new things as well, you know, there is a kind of different phase between how bespoke in the style that people learn and adjusting, as we were talking about before, the culture, the kind of corporate culture as well. Now, these, I think, from my experiences, are things that people get mixed up, actually. They kind of confuse one with the other. They confuse that, you know, we kind of have to approach certain people in a certain way because they learn in a different way and are more productive in this way, as opposed to actually the culture as a whole and kind of what we're working toward. And I think they're quite easy to get kind of mixed up as from a leadership position. I know you're kind of keen on the you know, the cultural side of things, and I think it's a massive topic, certainly for technical teams as well. Is that something common that you've seen, is people getting that wrong and getting not just those two but other aspects of it as well mixed up and confused, and to the point where you know, we've got it wrong here?
Yes, I don't think there is a right culture. I think that's quite important. I think sometimes you get this impression that kind of, you know, Google and Facebook are kind of, you know, the right culture for technology, where it's all sort of mildly cultish, very kind of freewheeling, and everyone doing their own thing, and sort of informal but intense. And it's not true that that's kind of the best way of running a technology function in a company, and that we should all try and be more like that. And rather like the differences developers have with learning, developers really do like different cultures. Some like kind of silence and focus and sobriety and kind of calm, methodical discussions about the best way of doing things. Some are kind of super chatty and friendly and really want to talk to absolutely everyone in the business and feel engaged. And there isn't a right way of doing it for every company. Of course, there are lots of wrong ways of doing it. And so it's more about eliminating the kind of the cultural problems, and then just kind of trying to settle on what works and what's achievable for a given company. But I definitely don't believe that, you know, there is the perfect kind of super agile, zero blame, maximum communication, super friendly kind of culture that we should all be aiming at. Certainly you don't want the opposite of that. You don't want communication barriers, and you don't want lots of blame and kind of risk aversion. But it is different cultures for different companies, and certainly for different kinds of software. And when I think about, you know, I've kind of worked on music industry websites for album releases. It's a whole different world of what's trying to be achieved than, let's say, academic publishing and how to store and retrieve complex scientific information. That's different. Those are two very different kinds of software, and they sort of work better under different cultures of how you build and create that software.
Yeah, and do you find as well that although you work within the technical teams, that other departments can influence the cultures, and that can be sometimes counterproductive for your team?
It can be. I'd almost say the opposite, which is, although it's hard to say sort of, you know, one most important thing in culture, but right near the top is software developers need to feel appreciated. There are a few developers who are kind of happy with the abstract beauty of the software they're writing and kind of don't care who uses it or who sells it or what happens to it after that, but they are a small minority. Now, most developers want to think what they've done has made someone happy. And ideally, that's the customer. Ideally, developers see all the lovely positive feedback that comes back through from end users. But if that's not available, and it's not in all businesses, it's really important that the business, the internal customer, is saying, people love this, or this has made my life so much easier, or, you know, this feature is great. Can we do it to these three other pages now? That's absolutely crucial. If you don't have that, it's a real problem. And I think one of the biggest traps companies fall into is kind of treating their tech department or their software development department as a sort of a bit of an external supplier, where they're kind of paying for it, so they want results, and if they get them, that's fine, but that's all it is. It needs to be a much more personal relationship than that, where there's real positive feedback going in both directions.
Yeah, it's interesting that I suppose you've had those kind of experiences. I personally think that that was 100% the case. Maybe 10 years ago, that was very common, definitely. But I think now there's much more expected from a product team or a dev team or whatever, because they're so much more closely associated with the product and the service these days that I don't think that that's changed. But I do think that it's interesting that the culture that's surrounding kind of different teams' communication with tech probably hasn't changed as much. However, the technical team are kind of expected to adjust their way of thinking in the sense that they need to be aware of business goals and outcomes.
Absolutely.
But you know, maybe the other way around, it's not necessarily that the approach hasn't been adjusted in that sense.
Yeah, I think that's true. There is an understanding that developers need to really know about the product, the customer, the business domain. And there is rather less recognition that the business need to know about the world of software. It's changing a bit, although I think it's still imbalanced. You can occasionally get a few interested business people along to maybe a high level tech discussion around, you know, future trends in software, but it's a tough sell really to get, you know, a marketing department to listen to the difference between cloud and you know, co-located hosting and what that means for anything much. That seems rather distant to them. And I think that's still a battle to fight, is how to keep non-technical parts of the business at the right level of technical knowledge and engagement.
Do you think that that's the responsibility of the technical team to kind of shout a bit louder, sort of thing?
Yes, I mean, really, it's the responsibility of the senior management of the company. But the technical team have their role to play in, first of all, not being defensive. So I think in general, we've got away from the kind of, you know, you wouldn't understand, it's too complicated, like, just trust me, we can't do it. Or I think we're moving away from that, although you still bump into it now and again. But there is a slight case of quite having the skills and the patience to explain what they do at the right level. You either get lots of really enthusiastic people who start using language that their audience can't possibly understand, and then they're a bit disheartened when the audience doesn't come back for more. Or maybe you get the sort of the CTO using some very high level, sort of abstract, slightly buzzwords, and that doesn't work either. So it's a tricky communication task. You know, how do you make, you know, the rise of, you know, event-driven software development mean anything to your sales team? And I'm not saying it's easy, but I think it's something tech teams and senior management need to think about and work at.
I think so. Like you said, I was just kind of questioning that, but I do think the responsibilities, it is on both sides. And I think that it's the vanity of it, isn't it, with tech? People just want it to work. They don't really care how it kind of works. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true. Do you even think that that's almost becoming true a little bit with people who are actually working in technical positions now, because they have kind of so much access to things, you know, to open source and such, that the real, real fundamentals of stuff, they don't even have, they can kind of skip that phase? Do you think that that's actually kind of creeping in now?
I mean, it's certainly happening. I think it's always happened. Kind of going back to where we started about it, the constant requirement to learn ever more things. I'm always amazed at the things that I learned 20 years ago that people just haven't got a clue about now. So, you know, the underlying mechanics of how email works, the SMTP protocol, kind of 20 years ago, you sort of had to know that if you wanted to write any software that sent or received emails. Now you absolutely don't. That's all hidden away under layers of libraries and abstractions. You can happily send millions of emails a minute without having a clue what the underlying low-level protocols are. So, and you know, if you go back even further, when I started writing software, I didn't know, you know, how assemblers worked, or the machine code, or the details of the CPU architecture, which 25 years before me would have been a requirement to do anything non-trivial in the software world. So there's that always that progression of people kind of being protected from the guts and the low-level stuff, whatever that might be. Is it a problem? I mean, ultimately, not really. I think all kind of techies in any field over a certain age, you kind of, you know, grumble about the young folk not knowing the basics anymore. But as I say, even when those grumbly old engineers were in their 20s, they didn't know whatever the basics were of a generation before. So it's not ultimately an issue, I don't think.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And I think it probably hurts you deep down to say that, though. You know,
I do have my moments of kind of jaw dropping. What do you mean you don't know what this does? But you know, in the end, the nitty gritty of technology isn't actually that important. And that is perhaps a manager's view of how software gets written. But, you know, one of the things I most like about the whole agile thing is, you know, what matters in software is, does it help anyone? And you can have the most beautifully written, solid, fast, secure bit of software. If it kind of solves a problem no one has, you've all wasted quite a lot of time writing it. And that's why my focus these days is very much on the business side of the interface, making sure that my team don't write pointless software. And it's still, I think everyone would be surprised at how much software is written and never released. You know, that's really pointless. I mean, that's a complete waste of everyone's time. And I still think,
but surely that's like that's an internal communication issue between teams, because who's, you know, you know what I mean? Like, I suppose that, like, yeah, isn't the business department or the marketing team or the, you know, research, are they not, yeah, are they not it doesn't make sense. I mean, it completely baffles me. Are they not the ones who are kind of, you know, aligning what the technical team would be doing with business outcomes?
Absolutely. And you know, I think some of the time that can be poor market research. You know, you think the market needs this feature, you go off and start writing it, and then someone actually double checks and realizes, hang on, this isn't going to help anyone. So there's an element to that. But I think there are things that technology teams can get wrong that also cause it from their end. One of those certainly is the way budgeting works. And lots of times I've come across situations where companies have allocated a certain amount of dev time to a project in a company, and they want to use it. You know, they've finally had permission to have 6 months of a scrum team to get whatever done, and they kind of get everything done in 4.5 months, which is great. And so then they make up other stuff to kind of use up their budget. It's a kind of use it or lose it situation. And that's where a lot of pointless stuff comes in, where someone says, the team aren't super busy. Why don't we do this pointless idea? Thinking it'll be it'll be a fun little experiment. Yeah, let's spend a couple of weeks doing this. And often that's a really bad thing to do. I mean, there are a lot of better things you can do with a bit of slack time in a technology department than kind of write random bits of software. So I think that can be a problem too.
Yeah, interesting. It's interesting, isn't it, the dynamics? But I think that gap's been certainly closed. And as we said before, you know, you as an example of having to take on much more of a business role. I can imagine before, you know, you were in this position, it was quite the transition from the first time you went from, I suppose, on the tools to, a leadership and having to understand the business fundamentals. Yeah. Was that quite, a challenge to kind of build out those soft skills, if you want to call them that?
Yeah, I think so. And it's some time ago now. But in my case, I made a very hard break. So I think some people, you know, they start off as developers and they're senior developers and they're like team leads, kind of doing 50% coding and 50% sorting stuff out, and they kind of drift away. In my case, it was very different. I was working away as a kind of a DevOpsy role, but very much hands-on. And I took a job using Java, which I'd never used in my life. It was a Java-based outfit. I'd never written a line of Java ever. And that was it. That was just a move from a essentially hands-on role to a pure management role. And I ended up actually kind of ducking back in as an emergency sysadmin for a couple of years until we could hire one. But I found the hard break was tough, but in some ways I recommend it. Because when I look at kind of new team leads or new managers, one of the hardest things for any techie to do is delegate technical stuff, especially to juniors. Yeah, it's really difficult if you're a good programmer to watch someone kind of writing code that works but is a bit clumsy and to resist the let me just fix this, let me just show you actually how you should have done it, let me just stop and explain kind of the right way of doing it. That's not only makes you a micromanager, it also leaves you no time to do your management job. And so actually I quite like the clean break. I would say for a lot of techies, if you want to move into management, you're not sure, go and you know, work in a project team with a technology you just don't know, because that will remove all the urge to micromanage, to get too low level, and you'll find yourself forced to focus on the new high level management stuff.
I also wonder now, how much, I'll just kind of draw the example, but for me, when I kind of stepped into management, it was strange that I never gave it the credit before I was in the position of management, which I think a lot of people are probably guilty of. And also the fulfillment that you get from the team success versus individual success, I suppose, is also kind of a surprise. You know, I just based on the way my personality is, I'm quite competitive and such.
Yeah.
You know, I was surprised at like the fulfillment that I got from seeing others do well. I think they're quite common. Was that also kind of the case for you as well?
Yeah, it's. I was lucky. My first management role was essentially a startup. So I got to build my team from scratch, which is a hugely helpful thing to do, partly because you get to kind of pick the sort of people you want to work with, but also just because you feel very differently towards the boss who hired you than you do towards the boss who came in one day replacing the old guy who left. So is that, I think it's an easier way to start in management if you do get the chance to build a little team from scratch. Of course, that doesn't last forever. Either you move somewhere or the team kind of gets very big or you merge or make acquisitions. But I think that's a nice way to start. The other thing, and I was very lucky in the first company I had a management role in, is training. And I think especially in technology, maybe, where lots of people are kind of self-taught, where there's this idea that a bit of Stack Overflow and a bit of trial and error will let you work out how to do it. Of course, in management, you can't do that. In trial and error affects people. You know, you can't just say, oh, I'll have a go at setting everyone really tight, strict deadlines for their work and try that for a few months, see how it goes. You'll really annoy your team. So it's much more important in the management world to do essentially training courses. And whilst I never really got a lot from technical training courses, I always would prefer to teach myself or read technical books. Management's a whole other story. I find management books kind of repetitive and a bit buzzwordy and usually 300 pages of what could have been said in 30, whereas some of the management training courses I've been on have been absolutely excellent and have taught me a huge amount about the right way to do things. So I do think there's a shift there for companies that, although it's expensive, you really do have to invest in management training if you want good managers.
Back to technology. Just as a technology nerd or someone who's interested in kind of what's coming next, obviously, as we've talked about from a management perspective, you have to kind of lead, you know, what makes business sense. But, you know, aside from that, keep your eye on what's coming next and what we could potentially use from a technology standpoint to improve the way we do things and efficiencies and such. Is there anything that you're kind of looking at that's coming that you think is going to potentially be able to really impact, you know, your team or kind of the business in general?
Technology related to the sort of the smooth operation of the company as a whole. It's interesting. My company has just moved into a completely brand new office, all fitted out with the kind of latest and greatest everything. And it's a lovely office and it's great and I like it. And despite all of that, once again, I am amazed by the fact that none of the video conferencing is of any use whatsoever. So I kind of feel that, you know, I think corporate communications have kind of been not going forward for a while. This whole idea that we'd all be doing, you know, video walls and conferences and the instant messenger would change everything. And, you know, I don't feel a lot of that. I am a believer in face-to-face interaction. I'm very glad that we merged several London offices into one big one so I can walk around and see people. The one of the things that I think is most important, and whether it's technology or not, I guess depends on your view, is informal meetings and informal collaboration. So, you know, as soon as you sort of schedule a meeting and sit down at a table with a screen, you know, people are looking at the screen, not each other. You've got a table in between you. You're sitting 5 to 6 feet apart on the boardroom table. That's not really great. As soon as you get people kind of standing up or sitting on sofas or in just kind of a room, it's a whole different dynamic. And I do believe that really makes a difference. That notion that there's never a wrong time to talk to someone about whatever's important to the company. As I say, whether that's technology particularly, I wouldn't like to say. Technically, I wish we had a more kind of everything readable approach to corporate communications. There is, I think, very little in a company that is genuinely private. You've got some HR stuff, you've got some payroll stuff, you might have some senior management, financial forecasting and future plans that perhaps you don't want competitors to hear about. But in general, the day-to-day of the business, everyone should be able to see everything that's going on. And to some extent, some of the kind of cloud document technologies, the Google Docs world, to some extent, the OneDrive, the Microsoft equivalent world, can help in that. It makes it a bit easier to just search across a whole company's document store to find out about something. But in the end, that's much more a cultural thing than a technological thing. I do think that lack of communication generally is the root of all evil in companies, and the more people share information, the better. As I kind of say, ultimately, that's not something that technology has a huge role in addressing. It's much more about the culture of people not hoarding information, not using it as a control mechanism or a defensive mechanism. Just everyone talk to everyone about everything is fine.
I think it's a good point, mate, and certainly one that is a constant frustration for me as well. So I certainly second that point, and I think there's thousands of people across the country that would also agree with you, John. Thank you so much, mate, for taking the time. We'll leave it there for now. Hopefully we can catch up again soon. But thanks so much for taking the time, mate.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud. Or check out the website, venturi-group.com. And keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.